I'm your host, Lee W. Johnson, and welcome to my podcast, where I talk about all things related to magic, witchcraft, demonolatry, and a whole load of other related things. If you would like to find out more about me, get in touch with me, or hire me for a service, please go to my website, leewjohnson.com, or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. Hello and welcome to the new week and welcome back to my channel. If this is your first time here and you're not sure who I am or what you're doing here, I'm Lee Johnson. This is my YouTube channel, and if you do like my content, you finally like my content, then make sure that you hit that subscribe button and the little notification bell so you know when new videos come out. And also give it a thumbs up, helps the algorithm. Share the video with somebody who you think might like it. Comment, you know, all the usual YouTube stuff that I tend to forget myself. So I have to remind people because I have to remind myself. All right. Just a quick one announcement before I get into the topic. I have taken my, I've got a South African website, devilmademe.co.za. I have added it into my link tree. So if you go into the description, you should find linktree.com/LeeWJohnson. So you'll find it in there. It's just labeled Devil Made Me Journal. So it was a shop. I have decided to completely get rid of that and turn it into a journal. So it's going to be explorations, experiments, mistakes, successes, and I will be exploring a lot of probably more advanced magic. It goes with the assumption that you do know the basics, or you may just want to read it for interest's sake so that you've got a goal to aim for, and then you can get the foundations, the basics, work your way up to it. Wherever you are, whatever your interest is. If you're interested in reading that, then go to devilmademe.co.za. As I said, it's going to have all my mistakes as well. It's just going to be a journal. And I'm incorporating or going to be writing on various things. At the moment, mostly gate opening. And using gate opening with scrying and also evocation work. I'm kind of taking methods from other people and adapting them, adjusting them to suit me, to also be able to do such things in a smaller space. Because some of the rituals, some of the techniques and practices do require quite a large space, and I don't have a large space, and a lot of people don't have a large space. So I'm going to be experimenting and exploring and creating new things, or adjusting, adapting, let's put it that way, for particular requirements. So there's going to be gate opening. I'll also be having a look into Kabbalistic gate opening, which is quite different. That's, you know, if we look at demonolatry style gate opening, it is about opening these gates and bringing that raw energy into your space, into your working space, whereas something like Kabbalistic gate opening is more about going inward into the inner temple, journeying down to the different sephira of the tree, opening the gate with the angelic name, etc., etc., etc. But I'll be exploring all of that. It'll just be an ongoing thing. So there's going to be gate opening, there's also going to be scrying, there's going to be evocation work. I've actually posted about, I take a trip to the river every week now, and I posted about that yesterday, the experience I had there. So that's working with the land spirits and the fae and things like that. So lots of things that we can explore. Anyway, going on a bit too much about that. If you are interested, you know where to go. Go to the link tree, go to Devil Made Me Journal, and you can subscribe to the newsletter or mailing list It's really just once a week. I'll let you know that there's new posts, new posts get sent to you. That's all it really is. Okay, so anyway, let's get into it. I was asked to speak about the dark feminine. Now, this is probably going to ruffle a few feathers. This is a can be a bit of a sensitive topic. Quite often we have to talk about binary aspects in order to get to the balance of everything. So if you'd like to continue the discussion, you can always join me on the Red Coven Discord server and we can chat about things and learn from each other, really. That's what it's all about, isn't it? We're learning from each other, we're doing magic, we are progressing, we are growing, and we have to do that quite often by discussing topics, So, the dark feminine. Now, when we talk about the dark feminine, what we're really talking about is this aspect of what people have separated. The light feminine from the dark feminine. So the light feminine is often considered to be the good woman, the one who it's very patriarchal. Quite honestly, it pisses me off completely. It's quite often seen as the good wife, the one who is submissive, who says the right things, does the right things, looks after the husband, doesn't swear, all that crap. Whereas the dark feminine is often considered to be that aspect of the feminine nature, which is total polar opposite of that, very sexual in nature. Taken both to an extreme, to start there, let's take both to an extreme and then we can meet somewhere in the middle. So if we take both to the extreme, then the light feminine is the barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen type wife of the patriarchal society, whereas the dark feminine is the one who is out drinking at night, picking up men, having one night stands with men, and all of that, the sexual, the drinking, the drugs. It's those are the complete polar opposites. So what we want to achieve is a balance between the two. A lot of our society is focused around this light feminine aspect and rejects the dark feminine. But what we want to do is find the balance, especially in magic, especially in witchcraft and things like that. So we have to find a balance between the two. Now, this isn't just the dark feminine, there's also the dark masculine and the light masculine. And in that scenario, we have the good man who is polite, who opens the door, and, well, it depends on the culture. Some cultures, the man has to walk in first to make sure there's no threat. But a lot of Western cultures, it's allow the woman in first, be the gentleman. And the dark masculine is very much about, it's sexual. It's about debauchery. It's actually encompassing all the taboos. And when we're talking about magic and witchcraft, a lot of it is about breaking taboos. There's a lot of energy that can be found in engaging with a taboo and breaking it. That breaking just releases so much energy because of the it incites a lot of emotion, a lot of just energy that flows through the body. It's engaging. There's a word that I'm completely trying to get to and I cannot get to it. It's just gone. So I'm just going to carry on anyway. All right. So really the dark aspect is that has to do with taboos, what we consider to be taboos, debauchery, drinking, drugs, sex, rock and roll, etc., etc. All the things that we enjoy. But the key to all of this is to find that balance between the two. It's not to reject one or reject the other. This is very similar to considering the ego. A lot of cultures or traditions or paths or spiritualities, religions, will say that we have to get rid of the ego, we have to cut it off, we have to remove it, and we have to throw it away, we have to just reject it, because the ego is bringing us down. What I was taught was that we have to strengthen the ego, especially if we are doing spiritual workings which causes us to move into alternate realities. We need to strengthen the ego, because the reason for that is because we need to create an anchor, and therefore when we do venture into non-ordinary or alternate realities, we've got an anchor which pulls us back. So, you know, there's all these different views, but what view makes more sense to you? For me, it is strengthen the ego, make an anchor, and through that strengthening we gain control of our ego self. And that's really what it is. It's about getting control of these things. I was reading something about the dark feminine. One of the suggestions was for a woman to find a man who has gotten control of his dark masculine, because through that control, you know, he's not going from one extreme or the other, you know, into one extreme or the other extreme. He has control of it, and therefore he's brought his entire aspect, his ego self, into balance. And through that process, what often happens is there's also a balance between the feminine and the masculine. This is all binary, I know, but through that process, what usually happens is that because we find balance between all of these different aspects, we come into a non-binary, an inner non-binary state, and we then have control over all of these things. So as I said, there was a suggestion I saw and read. If a woman seeks out a man who has mastered his dark masculine, then she can safely explore her own dark feminine and bring that whole thing into balance again. And again, through that process, somebody who's exploring their dark feminine will bring their light and dark feminine into balance, which will then lead to their overall masculine and feminine, bringing those into balance, which then creates a non-binary inner self, if we can put it that way. There's probably better words I can choose for this. Just doing my best to try and explain it. So as I said, if you want to continue the discussion, then please do so. But now, you know, when we talk about the dark feminine, we can also talk about the dark goddess. And I think the perfect example here would be Kali. Now, a lot of people will view these dark goddesses, especially Kali, who is seen with this garland of heads around her neck and a skirt of arms, literal, not weapons, but literal arms, and you know, the red tongue, the blue skin or the black skin, sometimes depending on the artist, it's sometimes black, sometimes blue, and the red tongue which is sticking out, and with often got four arms, two on the left of usually holding, one is holding a severed head, and the other one is holding a sword which has severed that head. So there's all this what a lot of people consider to be malicious type of imagery, and sadistic and evil and bad, and you know, you can't go to Kali because she's going to cut our heads off. Yeah, great. Please do. And I'll tell you why. if you've looked into the symbolism, Kali, this will obviously make sense to you. If you haven't, and you just see this dark goddess with this black skin and all of the symbolism, which is blood and severed heads and severed arms and all of these things, and you don't know all the symbolism behind it, it's going to give you a bit of a different impression. All right, so I'm going to refer you to a book. I've actually spoken about this one before. It's called Agora at the Left Hand of God. It's by Robert E. Swoboda, if I remember his name correctly. I haven't got on the title page here. I'm going to read you some passages out of this book, and this actually explains it extremely well. And it's, you know, when we talk about going to these spirits, the dark goddess, and you know, I talk a lot about demons on this channel, and from a Western perspective, a lot of people hear the word demon and they think, oh, it's evil, because that's how they've been raised. We've been raised by this Christian worldview in this Western world, and that's what we hear as we're growing up as children, and that's what gets ingrained. Demons are evil. But it depends how you approach them, how you understand them. If you've explored the roots of the word itself, but also the roots of these spirits that we're talking about. And what often happens is somebody who still has that Christian worldview ingrained in them and starts working with a demonic force is going to see fire and brimstone and something quite grotesque and evil and what have you, because that's their expectation. And this guy speaks about this quite a bit in here. So I'm just going to read you some bits out of this. People think that Smashantara, that's one of the names of Kali, or manifestations of Kali, is the most terrifying of goddesses, and she is. One of her names is Bayankari, that is the terrifier. But if you go to her with a heart full of love for Lord Krishna, she becomes Radha, Krishna's greatest lover. If you treat her as a mother, she loves you as a mother loves a child. But if you have no faith in Ma, the great goddess, and if you fail, then there remains nothing for you but to be born over and over again until you get it right. You may go to an image of Ma and tell her, "Wow, Ma, how lovely you are," or "how frightening," or whatever. But the emotion you feel is only a reaction to her outer form. You must know what sort of being you are worshipping if you ever want to develop a real relationship with her, if you ever want to get underneath her skin and reach her inner being. So that's really, I mean, when we view these images, we're viewing the outer shell, the outer appearance. So just some of the symbolism. Why is she blue? Robert Swoboda actually, I'm going to read this because this is actually something that Sri Ramakrishna wrote or said. Sri Ramakrishna was around in the mid 1800s. And this is actually something he said. Why is she blue? First ask that, and once you've understood it, you'll be able to comprehend the rest. Why is the sky or the sea blue? If you pick up a handful of seawater, it is clear, but the sea as a whole seems blue. Air is colorless, but the air is not. These are optical illusions, and the fact that you see Ma, or even Krishna for that matter, as blue is also an optical illusion, because you are seeing them with your physical eye. Were you able to see with the divine eye, you would see something quite different. But to you now, Smashantara is Shyama, a deep, rich, luminous midnight blue. So, you know, just that, just the color of her skin is one thing. As I said, sometimes she's depicted as dark blue, sometimes as black. And, you know, if we look at black, we look at the the night sky. You know, we see black. It's midnight blue, black, you know, whatever we see. But if you were to go deeper, if you were to travel into the night sky, it's not black. It's not, you know, don't enter this black space. It's just clear. There is no color. You have to see beyond the physical appearance. The black skin also represents Kali taking on our darkness. She takes on our darkness, and if we are prepared to give it to her, if we are prepared to hand over ourselves, our rajasic and tamasic selves to her, then she will take it on for us as a mother does for her children. There's a lot of symbolism with Kali. I'm not going to get into all of them, but the heads, the severed heads. Now, sometimes there's eight. This is the severed heads on the garland around her neck. Sometimes it's eight. Sometimes it's actually depicted as 50 heads, and that's said to be representative of the Sanskrit alphabet. But the eight, the garland of eight, is. Hang on, let me just go through here. They represent the eight noosas, the emotions which cloud the mind and incite one to perform karmas, thereby creating a tighter bond to the ever-spinning wheel of birth and death. These eight noosas or snares, pashas in Sanskrit, with which you could hang yourself are lust, anger, greed, delusion, envy, shame, fear, and disgust. So these are the eight nooses, the eight heads which Kali cuts off. The actual head that she holds and the bloody blade is cutting off your karma. So she cuts away your karma and takes on your karma. She cuts away the eight nooses from you and takes them on for you, takes on your darkness. Takes all of this if you are willing to actually give it, but we hold on to these things. We hold on to the anger and the greed because it makes us feel like we have something and we're afraid to not have something, and therefore we will not give all of these things away. But Kali's standing there as a loving mother and saying, just give me all your pain, give me all your greed, give me all your fear, and we won't give it to her. So yeah, that's our choice. Also the skirt that she wears of the arms is also releasing the karmas, taking on your karmas. And it covers her belly and her pelvic area because these are where we mostly like to or where we create these karmas mostly, from food and sex. She's also shown as, or Smashantara is also shown as pot-breasted, which is representative of the Divine Mother. The breasts full of milk. There's a lot of representation. The anklets. Smashantara does not wear silver jewelry but tiny cobras. The cobra is always the symbol of the deceased ancestors. When you do sadhana, you must always remember you are not doing it for yourself alone but for all your progenitors, etc. 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 So, there's also, for instance, her tongue is red. That's considered to be the rajasic energy, and she is trying to consume that rajasic energy in order to give you the sattvic energy. There's loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of symbolism, but when you look at it, it's not what I think we immediately think it is. When we immediately view something like Kali and we don't have any idea of the symbolism, it's never been explained to us, we've never explored it, we've never sat down and thought about what it might be. It's just this feminine figure with this dark blue or black skin holding a severed head with a bloody sword, got a garland of skulls around her neck, and has a skirt of arms. Of severed arms, and immediately that just is viewed as something quite evil, but it's not. You know, when you look beyond the appearance, when you look beyond the dark blue or the black skin, and you realize that it's actually, there's nothing, it's clear, it's pure. Then we start to look at the other symbolism, the severed head, the garland of eight skulls, the severed arms, which are the taking off on a karma, the black skin is the taking on of your darkness. All of these things, all of a sudden we realize that Kali is gorgeous, Kali is beautiful, Kali is magnificent. She is the mother, she is divine, the divine mother who wants to love you. And all you need to do is just go to her as a child would. But it's only when we see beyond that image, and we find that with a lot of things. You know, we see everything at surface value. We don't even take the time to look beyond that surface appearance to what's beneath, what's underneath. And as witches, as magicians, as people who follow these types of spiritual paths, we should be looking beyond and beneath, because, you know, we talk about the underworld. Where's the underworld? The underworld is below the skin. It's below the skin of a leaf. It's below, beneath the skin of a rock. You know, we need to look beyond. We need to look further than just the surface appearance. And this goes with everything. And it goes with the divine, with the dark goddess. It goes with the dark feminine. It goes with the dark masculine. It goes with everything. We have to look beyond it and try and find the actual... we have to find what's beneath and what is beyond, and bring everything into harmony. I like that word, harmony, that's a better word. Bring everything into harmony and balance, and, you know, then we can't go wrong. That's what witchcraft is all about. Anyway, really been rattling on today, so I'm going to, I hope that covers the topic enough, and I hope I didn't ruffle too many feathers with that. And now for the Ask Lee slot. All right, so as you may know, if you don't, if you have a question which you would like to like me to answer on this video, or this video slot on a Wednesday, then just ask in the comments below to one of the Ask Lee videos. If you ask on another one, then I'm not going to answer. If you are listening on the podcast and you'd like to ask me, you can leave a comment in the podcast. Just state that you want it to be answered live or on video or audio or whatever we're talking about. Because on the podcast, I do combine both Monday and Wednesday's videos into an audio. So there's no distinction between the two. All right. So let's get into today's two questions. This first one is from Occultista Machiege. Tell me if I'm saying that right or not. Some of the demonolaters consider themselves as equal as regular or typical Satanists. Does that mean that demonolator who chooses to work with Kabbalistic spirits like Raziel or Metatron is considered to be a defiler, heathen, blasphemer? I don't actually think we can answer this question, to be completely honest with you, for various reasons. Firstly, when we talk about Satanists, we have a variety of different types of Satanists. We have our atheistic Satanists, which are very much our Levian Satanists, and you'll find that the Levian Satanists will consider anybody else to not be Satanists. just point blank, they just don't like it. They don't want anybody else to be Satanists, just them. It's a bit silly if you ask me, but you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, I suppose. So we have our Levain Satanists who are atheistic. Then we have our theistic Satanists who actually believe that Satan is an actual being, an entity. And these are the people that the Levain Satanists say are not Satanists. Don't know why, if they want to call themselves Satanists because they believe in a being that's called Satan. You know, for me, just let them. You know, amongst those two crowds, you've got a variety of different aspects. Some people will be exclusively Satan. Others will be more pantheistic or even polytheistic. Demonolatry is very often considered to be soft polytheism. So you've got all these different, you know, one person is going to worship Satan and there are no other gods and goddesses. Another person is going to worship Satan as a primary being, a primary entity, and work with other spirits. Somebody else will not work with Satan as their primary being, but they may work as Satan, with Satan as part of their own personal pantheon. So the difficulty here comes in that so you asked, some of the demonologists consider themselves as equal as regular or typical Satanists. You know, what is a Satanist to begin with? What is a demonologist to begin with? You've got traditional or traditional demonolatry, modern demonolatry. A lot of demonolaters, or people who are calling them demonolaters, are just people following the left-hand path. They don't follow exclusively a path which may have been, I think we could probably say, we'll consider it to be based on the Dukant hierarchy and the Dukant teachings. It's based in something else. So, you know, this is where the problem comes in. We're using terms, titles, and things like that, which can mean so many things. So, whereas one person may say that you cannot work with an angel, another person will say you can, and they both call themselves demonolaters. Why? Because the person who says you cannot work with angels is probably still kind of ingrained in a Christian worldview. They consider angels to be this aspect of Christianity when it's not. Angels were around long before Christianity was even conceived. But they still have that hatred, that anger, that annoyance, that tie into that bond into the Christian worldview, and therefore they have a hatred for it. Whereas the person who says you can work with angels considers demon, the actual word demon, Daemon, or maybe we should pronounce it daemon, to be, you know, had to have its actual roots in meaning a being which is a divine intelligence. When we're talking about a divine intelligence, that's many, many things. That includes angels. So working a Kabbalistic system, and I mean, you'll find in demonolatry, and I'm not going to really say left-hand path, which gets a bit more broader. You'll find the Kabbalistic teachings and the Tree of Life and things like that. You'll find it part of those systems. You know, we have got the. I don't really want to talk about the Tree of Death, the Klipothic tree, because it's not something I follow and not something I believe is even relevant. And you know, you're probably going to get 80% of left-hand pathers who are going to swear at me right now and say, "What are you talking about? It's such an important part." It's a new concept. And I'm not saying just because it's new, it's irrelevant. It's just, I think it's irrelevant because the Tree of Life, The Kabbalistic tree of life, the Etz Chaim, envelops the entirety of the cosmos. So to now all of a sudden create this tree, which is the tree of death, because this is the tree of life, just makes it edgy. That's all it's doing, really. It's just making it edgy. And, you know, it's already part of the Etz Chaim. It's not separate from it. You cannot separate the two. That's just my personal opinion. I think it's irrelevant. I think it's ridiculous. But a lot of people are going to disagree with me. That's fine. Well, I'll probably get some hate mail for this one. All right. So, you know, I'm not sure if that answers the question or not. It's a bit convoluted. But, you know, as I said, would we consider them to be defined as heathen blasphemers? I don't mind being considered a heathen personally, defiler and blasphemer. You know, people on this left-hand path are antinomians. I'm going to say something which is probably going to get me even more hate mail. Jesus Christ was an antinomian. He was a left-hand path magician. So, you know. He went against the grain, he went against society. So, I'm a bit strange, I know. All right, so as I said, I don't know if that answers the question, whether you're just sitting there swearing at me or laughing at me, but let's go on to the next one. Fatos Squirrel again, I love that name. What does it mean that the spirits we're meant to work with are always with us? Since we're born or before incarnation, are they in the foreground just waiting for us to contact them? Are they constantly watching us? This is going to depend a lot on your worldview. So I'm going to speak from a personal perspective. And I've said this is purely personal, my own experiences. And that might change in 10 years' time, who knows? I personally believe that all of these entities, the gods and the goddesses and the demons, we're bonded to them and they're bonded to us in some way and form energetically. You know, this could become an extremely convoluted conversation as well, because depending on how you view the cycle of death and rebirth, you know, physical death and rebirth into a new physical form, you know, how you consider that to progress is also going to play a key part in this. But let's try and keep it as simply as possible. So all of these entities we are bound to, they are part of us. You know, we see them as separate beings because that's how we find it easier to interact with, easier to communicate with, easier to talk about, really. so we kind of externalize them and we create these entities, and they are entities which are independent from us, but we are all one, therefore they are part of us. And these particular, I believe there are particular entities which are more personally connected to us and bound to us, and they're always there. They always have been, they always will be. And as we progress through our incarnations, if we get thrown back into the cosmic soup, we get pulled out, we don't get pulled out as our pure original self. It's a combination of a few people that we get pulled out of and put into a new incarnation. So, you know, as we progress, we pick up more of these bonds, and but there are some consistencies, I think, personally, and there are consistencies through these different lifetimes. So anyway, so we've always got these entities which are close to us, which we are bound to, which we are bonded to, and we then become aware of them. As we start to become more spiritually aware, we become more aware of these bonds that we have with these entities. And these entities, we may call them gods and goddesses, we may call them demons, we may call them fae, we may call them land spirits, we can call them all ancestors. So these are ancestral bonds, you know, again, depending on your worldview, what you believe in. So, you know, they're always there. And, you know, we can talk about the holy guardian angel, or the personal demon, or the crown, the drake and the crown, the nefesh and the root, neshama, the lower self and the higher self, the shadow and the light body, whatever we're going to call it. This holy guardian angel, this higher self, you know, that's always there. That is us, but it's also considered to be separate from us. It's not part of our soul, but at the same time, these are the paradoxes which we are faced with. So that's always there as well, because that's our driving. That leads us or shows us our true will, and it doesn't really give a shit if we are following our true will or not. It will just sit there and go, okay, well, I'll wait. When you become aware of me, then I'll start telling you what your true will is. If you want to ignore that, it's fine. I'll wait again. You know, couldn't really give a shit. But it's there. And it's through our own processes that we become aware of these entities. I was listening to a podcast, an old podcast from Peter Padden, the Crooked Path, this morning, and it was a round table with a variety of different witches, and one of them was Robin Artisan, and he was actually saying that initiation, we consider initiation to be a beginning, almost like a new beginning to a new stage in our spiritual life, or if it's a rite of passage, our mundane life even. But these initiations are considered to be new beginnings, and we're talking about white thread or silver thread initiations here, initiations from spirit itself. And Robin was actually saying that there is no beginning. There is no beginning and there is no end. It's always there. It's always constant. What happens is we become aware of these things, and it's the same thing here. We become aware of these spirits, we become aware of these entities that are with us, guiding us, you know, pushing us in particular directions so that we can get to where we need to go to. Quite often we don't know it's happening. As we progress more and more, we become more aware of these entities, and we become more aware of these little nudges here and there. And you know, that's me, and that's my personal belief anyway. Take away from it what you wish. If you think it's a load of bunk, that's fine, but, you know, maybe I'll speak to somebody and we'll help them to develop their own personal views. Anyway, all right, so, again, hopefully that answers that question as well. All right, so as I said, if you've got any questions you'd like me to answer, please ask them in the comments below. I think I'm running out, so I would appreciate some more questions. And I'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Cheers for now. Bye-bye. This podcast was brought to you by, well, myself, Lee W. Johnson. To find out more about me, please visit my website at leewjohnson.com or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. If you like the video format, then subscribe to my YouTube channel, where I also host a live show every Friday with Rev Kai called The Black Hat Chat. It's just two witches chatting about traditional witchcraft and other topics. That's me for this week. Hope to hear from you soon. Thanks for listening.